Is there ever a time when we should say that it would have been better for a person if they had never been born or if they had died on the day of their birth? Maybe sometimes we, feeling particularly low, have cried or said, "I wish I had never been born." And this afternoon, as we look at chapter 6 of the book of Ecclesiastes, in verse 3, the latter part of that verse states, "I say that an untimely birth is better than he." And this untimely birth means dead at birth, or perhaps even aborted. It simply means that it would have been better if that person had not ever existed as a live human on earth. Now in verses 2 and 3, the circumstances of that statement being made is set forth for our consideration. In verse 1, it is called an evil. That is, here's an evil, and here's an evil that I've seen. And the writer describes it as something that's common among men. This is something that I see, and it's a very bad thing, and I see it that it happens frequently among the human race, and therefore it's a very common thing. Verse 2, "A man to whom God hath given riches and wealth and honor, so that he wanteth nothing for his soul of all that he desireth, yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof." That's the first problem. Here's a man who has gotten, well, three things: riches, wealth, and honor. Riches and wealth evidently here are not exactly the same thing. He's gotten what wealth, he's gotten what riches can buy. He has riches, he's used riches, and he's got wealth. And he also has received honor. And he doesn't want anything. And he's like the rich fool who says, "Soul, take thine ease." You remember the parable that Jesus spoke of the rich fool who had all the things he wanted. And he said, "Now, fool, or rather soul, take thine ease." Well, this is exactly the same circumstance here, that his soul wants nothing that he desires. But there's one thing that happens before the man can sit back and enjoy it. "This night shall thy soul be required of thee." That's in the parable that isn't here, but that's the implication. "For God giveth him not power to eat thereof." That is, he never gets to partake of his wealth and his riches and his honor in the sense of enjoying it over any period of time. Why? Something happens, and a stranger eats it. That is, someone conquers him, takes his life. That's probably what this writer's talking about. And when you look at the book of Ecclesiastes, we need to view it from the viewpoint of Israel and all the neighboring nations, and Israelites themselves, as they live in a land where there are a lot of things that they can look at and wish they had. It also applies to me and you. Don't misunderstand me. But what has happened? Well, this man lost everything, and someone else has stepped in and enjoyed it. This is vanity. And it is as an evil disease. That is, it can't be stamped out. It just occurs on and on and on and on. And perhaps even the occurrence of it is without much warning. It is as a disease. This thing is common to man. I've seen it many times, the writer states, where a person accumulates riches and wealth and honor, and then all of a sudden he does not get to eat off that which he has accumulated, doesn't get to enjoy it. It's like a disease. It takes down many men. "If a man beget 100 children and live many years, so that the days of his years be many." See, here's a different circumstance. Here in the first part of this revelation, the Bible tells us that a man has riches and wealth and honor. It doesn't talk about his about children. So someone's saying, okay, here's a man who really went after it all, and it turned out badly for him. So what you ought to do is seek to have a really large family where you can have a lot of children who will take up for you, who will provide for you. This is the way to do it rather than seeking after riches and wealth and honor and things of that nature. Well, here he says, here's a man who begets 100 children. Exaggeration, of course, but he's trying to teach us a truth. And though he lives many years, here's a man who's an extremely large family. He's lived a long, long time. And his soul be not filled with good. Here again is the same kind of circumstance. And also that he have no burial. The implication is that he doesn't even have a gravestone to mark his place of burial, even though he's had 100 children, and even though he's lived a long, long life. When he's buried, he has no gravestone to mark his place of burial, so he's just like the other person in this same story. Now, because of this, these two things, the inevitable happening, either your family forgets you and doesn't even mark your burial site with a gravestone, or someone else just takes you out of the way and then takes over what you've left. In these kinds of circumstances, the grief that it brings, the hollowness that it portrays, well, it's just better if a person like this had died at birth. Now here's why that it would have been better if died at birth. For he cometh in with vanity and departeth in darkness, and his name shall be covered with darkness, that he's never seen light. Everything is dark. He never saw day, even though he was born. Moreover, he hath not seen the sun, nor known anything. This hath more rest than the other. His argument is this, that here's a baby that's born and it does not live, it even is stillborn, and it's better than the man who's lived a long life and had 100 children, or a man who had a lot of wealth and riches and honor, because this child has never seen anything, and it has more rest because it doesn't have any problems to deal with in the grave. So this is assuming that this person who dies and another stranger takes his place, that he's lying there in the grave worrying about all he left behind. It also assumes that this person who's had a lot of children, lived a long life, that when he dies, he lies in the grave and worries about it all. Now, that's the fallacy of this argument. None of that's true. We don't do that. Verse 6, yea, though he live 1,000 years twice told, yet hath he seen no good. Do not all go to the same place. The argument is that the baby that never lived didn't see anything, and therefore it's better off. And yet the man who had 100 children lived a long life, he's in the grave. The man who had riches, wealth, and honor, he's in the grave. The baby that didn't live is in the grave. So they're all in the same place. Now, so this is looking at life without benefit of revelation. Just the way a man would look at it if we had no Bible at all. We didn't have a Bible. This is the way we would look at life. I mean, it didn't make any difference how much you did, you just wind up in the same place. Well, that's true of the human body, and that's true of flesh, but it's sure not true of the spirit. Without revelation, there would be no God to whom we could give our lives. Does this sound like Paul the Apostle when he wrote of his near death? I've fought a good fight. I've kept the faith. I've finished the course. Henceforth there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness. See how different it is? Paul didn't despair, and yet he wasn't going to leave anything except a dead body. That's all he left. We don't know that he had any children. He was probably forsaken by his wife. He never speaks of her. We know how badly treated he was. And yet Paul didn't say, I wish I'd never been born. I'm going into the grave. Boy, and there's not anything there, and there's not anything after it. When Paul looked down into the grave, he didn't look down in the grave with this kind of attitude at all, did he? He looked down in the grave with the idea, I lived my life. I did what I could. Henceforth, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness. There's resurrection after death. There's life after death. I've invested my life in serving God. There's a wonderful future for me. And that's because we have revelation about Jesus and the resurrection and what Christ has done for us when he died on the cross. We don't have this kind of view of life that is so discouraging. All the labor of a man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is never filled. You just get the idea of sort of a humorous picture of a huge funnel and a little end of it stuck in a fellow's mouth, and everything he makes just dumped in there. And that's it. That's all there is to life, is an open mouth and a big funnel with a little end in here, and that's it. Just everything, that's all you work for. And that's not much of an incentive, is it? All you do. Now, it's hard for us to think about that. But 100 pounds of rice or a big sack of rice in India cost about a week's wages. And there are many a man who works in India that all he gets out of a week's work is just enough rice to live that week so that he can work another week to make another bag of rice for him and his family, and that's all he ever gets out of life. That's it. He never has enough money to go anywhere. He never has enough money to hardly fix his house. He goes out and digs up some stuff to patch the roof or whatever it is he has, but whatever he labored that day, he's not going to put anything in the bank. He's not going to go out and eat. He's not going to buy a car. He's not going to buy fishing tackle. He's not going to buy an extra dress for his wife. Not going to have a birthday party. He can't even buy candles if he had a birthday cake. So what are we looking at? He labored every day, all day long, all week, and at the end of the week, he got enough money to buy enough so he could do it again. That's sort of circumstance that we're seeing here. Although I rather think it can also be said of us many times that, you know, we just work for things that are no more lasting than the food that we eat. And this is true, for what hath the wise more than the fool? What hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? That is, it happens to men who are godly and to men who are ungodly. It happens to a wise man, it happens to the fool. Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. This also is vanity and vexation of the spirit. His meaning here is, be satisfied with what you can see rather than imagining all the things you don't have. You know, oftentimes, we ought to look at what we have and count it. It's called counting your blessings, rather than thinking about all the things we don't have and the things we wish we had. All of this usually does is just enhance our unhappiness and make us more and more distraught and disturbed in our thinking, and our lives get more and more miserable as we simply think about things we don't have. Used to, we had to imagine it or read it in a magazine. Now all day, 24 hours a day, most of the day, 7 days a week, there's the TV set with a 30 channels showing us what we don't have and how wonderful it is somewhere else and how wonderful it'd be with someone else. That which hath been is named already, and it is known that it is man. Neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. Seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? In other words, There are many things that all they do is increase the emptiness of life. They don't contribute anything to the substantial happiness that men seek. People who want to find happiness in things, if you just assign them the value of zero, and you know, if you're looking for something and you say, okay, what's this, what rating should this have for happiness? That is, what is the rating of this to bring happiness to a human's life? We say, okay, here's a TV set. We just look at the thing in the store. Could we say, now here's this thing. We'll say it has a 10 rating for bringing happiness, or it has a 100 rating for bringing happiness. So if you buy that, you know you've got a 10, whatever. Everything's got a zero on it. There's not a thing in this world that you can buy with money that has happiness value. It doesn't make any difference what it is. It only brings happiness if you know how to evaluate its worth and integrate it into your life. So that it, and then it that is probably not what brings happiness, but it's your attitude toward that brings happiness. The attitude toward the person that got it for you. And not the thing, but that which it represents brings happiness. So you just add up everything there is in this world, because all they ever have on them as ability to bring the kind of deep satisfaction we seek in life, they all got zeros. And you add a string of zeros, you got zero. That's the idea. There be many things that increase vanity, that is, that increase emptiness. What difference does it make how many things like this you have? And he comes to the same kind of conclusion that he did this morning. For who knoweth what is good for man in this life, all the days of his vain life which he spendeth as a shadow? For who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? Again, it brings up that old question, what about life after death? Well, if you just look without any divine inspiration, without a Bible, you just look at life, the answer is everybody dies the same way. Everybody goes the same place. No matter how much you get, you leave it all behind. And if you really do get a good start in life, you do make a lot of money and you gain some wealth, you gain honor, and then somebody takes it away from you, kills you and gets it, conquers you and gets it, or disease takes it from you, and then someone rises up and enjoys it, then that's empty. Might have a big family, live a long time, but you don't have your soul fed. There's no real happiness. There's no real contentment, and that didn't work either. And these are the best things that people know how to try. You ever heard anybody say, boy, I tell you what, you people do in order to be happy, you just need to be poor. That's the way to do it. His brothers, you know, we don't usually think of that. And yet that's exactly what Jesus told the rich young ruler. Now we tell people if we had, we would be happy. Jesus said if you had not, you could be happy. I mean, just about all the advice, I never told people just the thing that will make you happy is to get rid of every penny you've got. Just, you know, give it all away. Some way, somehow, that don't seem like that'd work. And yet Jesus said it would. If you would have riches in heaven, just sell thy good, give them to the poor. And come and follow me. I think that's key, don't you? Come follow me. Whether you got goods or you don't have goods, you can have happiness if you follow Jesus. I believe that. I believe a wealthy man who follows Jesus can be happy, and I believe a poor man who follows Jesus can be happy. I don't think it's the wealth or lack of it. I think it's the dedication and the way we see Christ. Because when we follow him and invest our life in him and his life and his teaching and his ways, then our lives become valuable. And we, like Paul, can thank God for the life that we put into his work. Let's stand together and sing. You know, I really think that if a man said, I'm going to give up God, I'm just going to turn my back on Jesus Christ and seek wealth, I don't think he'd be happy. And I don't think a man who's poor could say, I'm going to turn my back on Jesus Christ and go out and seek wealth and even gain it and be happy. I don't think those are two very minor issues, but the real issue is, come thou and follow me.